This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Every time a high-profile mass shooting occurs in this country, a debate over the nation's gun laws ensues. And in recent years, as soon as the emotion dies down, the laws remain essentially the same as they were before.
One of the contentions that inevitably arises is that there is a clash of cultures when it comes to guns, that urban lawmakers who favor tighter controls don't take into account the role, the legal role, that guns have historically played in the more rural American West.
But the story of Craig Collins may be one that bridges the divide just a bit. Collins' recent book, Thunder in the Mountains, A Portrait of American Gun Culture, is a memoir told through the lens of how guns have touched his life and the lives of friends and his family, going as far back as his ancestors in Wisconsin. Craig Collins, welcome to Lake Effect.
Pleasure to be here. Always glad to be in Wisconsin.
This is a memoir. When did it strike you to write your memoir through the lens of the guns that have been a part of your history?
Well, it's been an interesting journey, and it's been a long journey, and it's one that actually started when I was 13 years old. I was on a deer hunt on the opening day of deer season in northeastern Nevada in a very rugged, remote area of northern Nevada called the Jarbidge Range, and it was in northeastern Nevada, and my grandfather had given me a .30-30 Winchester. It was just like the one that Chuck Connors used to use in The Rifleman. And it was the first deer hunt I'd been on. It was 6 days after my 13th birthday. I was quite young. And in the afternoon, I sat down and wondered how many bullets I had in the gun. And it was the kind of gun where you cock it and the bullets are ejected. And I cocked it once, cocked it twice. And on the third time, my index finger slipped off the trigger guard. I snapped the lever shut. And there was a tiny pinch on a little tiny bit of skin on my index finger. And I had a natural reflex, and I said, ow, and I yanked my finger back, and boom, the gun went off. The bullet traveling 2,300 miles per hour, spinning at 5,000 revolutions per second, went through my foot and pretty much vaporized everything in its path. And if you could pick a spot in the lower 48 states that would be the worst place to shoot yourself, that was probably it. I was 6 miles from the nearest dirt road, 30 miles from the nearest paved road, 50 miles from the nearest phone and 110 miles from the nearest hospital, and it was just an incredibly painful experience.
Obviously, well before the days of cell phones here.
Yeah, there wasn't an aspirin or a shot of whiskey in sight, and there certainly weren't any cell phones and no helicopters. But just to kind of wrap up that train of thought, I lived in a small town in Winnemucca, Nevada. It was in north central Nevada. It was a ranching, mining, railroad town. My dad worked for the Bureau of Land Management. And while I was there over a course of about a 3-year period, five of my classmates and I were all shot, as was the father of my 8th grade girlfriend. And
I imagine that would have been typical for anybody in a town like that at that time.
It's, it's pretty remarkable. And thinking back on it, I guess what really struck – I didn't really think much of it because people back then, they go, yeah, the kid shot himself. Yeah, what are you going to do? And we had three of my classmates were killed. One had severe brain damage. One had a serious injury to his neck and torso. So I got off lucky with the foot. But when it really struck me, I actually saw the movie Boys in the Hood, I believe, in the early 90s. And I thought after that movie really moved me, and I thought about it for months afterward, and I said, boy, it would just be really awful living in, South Central Los Angeles with the threat of gun violence hanging over your head like the sword of Damocles. And then it dawned on me that I had lived in one of those places, and there were probably 300 boys in grades 6 through 12 in Winnemucca, and six of them had been shot. And so if you were a boy in Winnemucca, you had about a 1 in 50 chance of getting shot. And those are real Russian roulette numbers. The only difference in the Mountain West with gun violence compared to the inner city is that most of the casualties involve accidents and suicides, where in the inner city they're almost completely flipped, where most of them involve homicides. But the rates are extremely similar.
And the incident where you shot yourself in the foot kind of underscores much of this book. has it likewise always felt like a part of your life since then? I don't necessarily mean, you know, are you in pain from it? But that story, it's a really formative one.
It's a very formative one. You know, it happened at a very formative age, and it's something that, you know, it definitely gets your attention. And whenever the subject of guns come up, I am very tuned into it. And so that's why I've always kind of had a keen interest on guns and gun safety. And so I really do know what it's like to be shot. And a lot of people are flippant in their comments about guns, and they're very casual in their comments about guns, and I am not. You know, every time I put my socks and shoes on in the morning, I'm reminded of it. I'm reminded of it quite frequently. And when I see somebody else get shot, I'm reminded of it. So, yes, I think about it quite a bit.
You know what it's like to be shot. And from your description, it is not any fun whatsoever to be shot.
No, and it's nothing like, you know, especially shooting yourself in the foot. You know, when I came back home, you know, as teenage boys will do, I got quite a bit of grief. And I remember, you know, hobbling home on crutches in a cast, you know, and a few days after I'd returned, and the, you know, my friend's mother leaned out the second story window and said, "Hey, hop along, how you doing?" You know, that sort of stuff. So it's nothing like, you know, when Yosemite Sam has a six shooter go off and he hops around for a few minutes and then goes off chasing Bugs Bunny again. You know, it's an extremely painful experience. And once you're shot, you stay shot. A part of your body leaves, and that's one of the things about gun casualties is people who are wounded, that stays with them the rest of their life. It's a very serious injury.
And the scene you paint in this book about the aftermath of your being shot, you know, being in this remote place, your dad has gone off to get help, and you're just screaming and trying not to go into shock. It was it's painful to read.
Yeah, it was actually painful to write too. It was really odd. I started writing it, and actually my foot really started hurting because I hadn't really thought about the pain in a long time. And once I started writing about it, and really, you know, I said, "Wow, what did that really feel like?" It was painful, and it was really hallucination-inducing pain. I can't even – it's a pain beyond description. But, you know, there are 117,000 people shot in this country every year. It's just a staggering number. There's 33,000 killed, 84,000 wounded. And as much as, you know, taking a 30-30 bullet in the foot hurts, you know, the I end the book with my son's best friend when he was 15. He got cut from the football team, and a girl turned him down for the prom, and he probably thought it was the end of the world. And he clambered up into his attic, found his father's gun that had been hidden there, and his mother found him dead in a pool of blood. And as much as getting shot in the foot hurts, it is nothing like the pain of a and the grief of a mother whose son has died at such a young age, and that happens all too frequently in this country.
You lived, as you say, in Winnemucca, Nevada, and then later Bishop, California. Is it stretching things to say that nearly everyone has a gun in those kinds of places?
No, it's not stretching anything at all. You know, when I was growing up, there was, you know, people thought nothing of you know, having guns. People had gun racks in their trucks, especially during hunting season. I'm sure it's like that in Wisconsin when you go north. And I recall, you know, I was out running on the cross country team one day. I saw a bunch. It was opening day of dove season, and I saw a bunch of doves in this field we ran across. And the next morning, I hopped on my bicycle with my 410 shotgun. I drove out there, shot a few doves, and drove back. And I'm driving through a neighborhood with a 410 shotgun, and people were stopping, going, "Hey, how many doves did you get?" And so it was really, you know, unusual, but the gun ownership rates are quite high, and it has to do – I get into the in the book about the historical nature of guns and the gun culture and how that came to be. And a lot of it – my family came from Wisconsin.
Right. So this is – you trace this history all the way back to pre-Civil War Wisconsin.
Yes. And you know, I don't have quite have the correct William Faulkner quote, but he says you know, the past is not very far away. In fact, it's not even past. And so I kind of tied it into my family history simply because I think it's informative of how the country moved west and how it came west. And that's what my ancestors did. But it also is very informative about how the gun culture really got entrenched in the western U.S. And then it spread to the rest of the country from there. And Wisconsin was on the frontier. My great-great-great-grandfather was a Colonel James James Collins. He fought in the Black Hawk Wars. He came to Wisconsin in the Black Hawk Wars. My great-grandfather, Benjamin Franklin Collins, was born on a farm near Richland Center. He was left fatherless by the Civil War. He went west as soon as he could. He was funded by relatives and friends in Wisconsin, and he prospected for gold. And in 1909, he struck a very rich vein of gold in Jarbidge, Nevada. And that's how they came west. But they all had guns, and, you know, the gun culture stayed. And when you talk about this culture, you know, I'm literally two generations removed, three generations removed from people who were in the Civil War and people who went west and killed thousands of buffaloes and that sort of thing. So they all had guns.
The other image that recurs in this book is your description of what bullets do when they enter a body, whether it is a deer or a human. It is not – you really, I think, paint a pretty accurate picture here.
Well, you know, this book is I put a lot of faith in my readers, and I let them decide. I don't editorialize. It's not a political screed, and you know, I believe that you know my readers are smart. I don't believe they need to be coddled in puffy balls of cotton. This is a difficult subject, and I think it's an intelligent book. One of the things that I purposely did was one of the things I've done my whole life is people go, "Oh, you shot yourself in the foot, huh?" You know, and it's just kind of funny, just because there's, you know, if you get shot in the butt or you get shot in the foot, it's just people laugh. But I wanted to make a point of what bullets actually did when they passed through the body and what it's like to get shot with a 30-30. It's an extremely powerful gun, and so I actually started off as a physics major, so I was always interested in that. And it's pretty dramatic. These bullets, many of them travel at three times the speed of sound when they hit the body. They don't drill through the body just like a drill going through a piece of wood. It's not that clean. They expand. They're going so fast that they create a shockwave through the body. They kind of jellify and liquefy anything in their path. And they create a vacuum when they leave, and they pull matter out of the body. And so a bullet may have a diameter of, you know, an eighth of an inch or a quarter of an inch. It might be quite small. But by the time it leaves your body, it may have the diameter of a quarter or half dollar. And then it also, the shockwave in the vacuum, has a diameter of up to a foot. So these are highly, highly lethal projectiles, and I don't think people really appreciate that.
Well, and so you write in the author's note that this is not an anti-gun book. But what do you want your readers to come away with?
Well, it's kind of interesting. It's not an anti-gun book. I tell a series of stories, and I let the reader decide. And I also made a note that one of my favorite books is Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five. And he had in one of the chapters where he was talking about somebody about writing a book about the firebombing of Dresden in World War II. And the guy said, "Well, is it an anti-war book?" And he said, "Well, I suppose." And he said, "Well, you may as well write an anti-glacier book, you know." And that's kind of the thing when you say, "Oh, I'm going to write an anti-gun book." So I didn't really want to write – I didn't want to write an anti-gun book. I want to let my readers decide. And so, you know, I do think if you read this – and you go through it and you're thoughtful, I do think that you will come away with a conclusion that, you know, that boys and guns don't mix and this is a big problem. You know, my personal opinion about guns, I can certainly get into that. I've read all the research. I've done all the data analytics. I've gone through the numbers myself. I've crunched the numbers. And the single biggest thing that jumps out at me is that the gun problem in the United States is uniquely male-centric. And that's one thing I don't think people appreciate. 97% of all gun casualties in the United States involve a male. 98% of all school shooters are male. 98% of the police of people shot in police shootings are male. A male in the United States over the age of 13 has a greater chance of getting killed by a bullet than they do of prostate cancer. So, you know, I guess the message I would give is that certainly, you know, men and guns, there's a problem with that. But boys and guns in particular – boys are attracted to guns in ways that girls simply are not. They are attracted to guns like magnets to metal. They just have an attraction. So if you're going to have a gun in the house, if you insist on having a gun in the house, and you have a boy in the house also, you must keep that gun locked up in a gun lock with a trigger lock on it, in a gun safe with a trigger lock on it, or even better yet, keep it off premises in a gun locker at a shooting range.
It's an interesting part of the equation that I think you're right, does not get discussed all that often.
Right.
Craig Collins, thanks for discussing it with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It was an absolute pleasure being here.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Craig Collins is the author of Thunder in the Mountains, A Portrait of American Gun Culture. He was in Milwaukee this fall to read from his book at Boswell Book Company, and he visited us then.
Keep listening. We'll take a quick break now and then be back with the dean of Marquette University's Law School when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.